Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is an incredible artist with Ryan from Ophelia Toys cranking out sculpting and painting, working with Paul over at Mile High Sufubi. It's an incredible week. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. If you want to follow us along on all socials at Toys on Tap, check out our YouTube, and there's toy unboxings and reviews, all kinds of goodness over there. And if you want even more time with each artist, you can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. It's 10 to 15 extra minutes with each artist on an episode called The Nitty Gritty, and it's absolutely fantastic. Now let's get back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap.
Can you hear me now?
Heck yeah.
Right on. I've got a fan blowing on my face. It's like a million degrees here, buddy. You can hear all right?
Yeah, I can hear everything. Luckily, whatever you're speaking into is cutting out the sound of the fan.
Oh, sweet. I've got a new iPad that I'm learning. So hopefully it's got some fancy stuff going on.
That's the way to do it. Do you want to do video on today or video off? How do you feel?
Totally video on. Am I not doing that right now?
Bottom left corner for you.
Sorry, I've never done a Zoom meeting before.
This is the most and least professional Zoom meeting you'll ever do.
Bring it on, dude. That's fine with me. How's that?
Incredible. We have to talk about the fact. Do you live in that now?
I do. Yeah, that we can talk about whatever you want, brother. My life's an open book.
It's incredible to see that behind you.
It feels like a green screen almost when I sit here, like it's not real.
Yeah. I had gone to full disclosure, I work in a church. And okay. This is gonna sound super weird. I think there's too many of them.
Okay.
And a lot of them are dying. And so it's like, what are we gonna do with these buildings? Like we can't just hoard buildings.
And that's exactly what happened here. Yeah, go ahead. I'll tell you my story.
And one of the crazy things about, I went to Portland one time and friends of mine bought a church and were starting to live in it. And I was like, how do we do that? And then you did it.
I did it. So it's been a dream forever.
Unreal. Let's dive into that. But before we do anything, introduce yourself. Tell us who you are. Let's see what's up.
Abraham, thank you so much. First off, I owe you an apology for yesterday. For not showing up at the right time. I've spent most of my life in construction, and I know myself to be, I pride myself on being punctual. So I apologize for that. But yeah, thanks for being cool about it and being so chill about everything, man.
Of course.
Hey, so my name's Ryan Taylor, and I started making toys 5, 6, 7 years ago. Most of my life has been spent in construction. I grew up in Colorado. Denver mostly. I moved to Chicago, about 30 years ago, moved back to Denver 20 years ago, and now I'm back in Illinois in this church that I'm sure we'll talk about here in a bit. But yeah, pretty simple life, man. Growing up, I've got a small family. My folks are wonderful. They're supportive. I've got a sister who's a nurse in Georgia. And that's it, man. I lead a pretty chill, simple life. I've structured it that way.
I love it. I love hearing all about it. So open the doors, tell me about the church, and then we'll go to your past.
Of course. So yeah, so you can see all this back here. And I still feel so, I'm not a religious person, but for lack of a better word, I feel so blessed to have this space and be able to create art in this space. So I was living in Denver. You know, I know you're in San Diego, right?
Yeah.
So also on the most ridiculously expensive places to try to eke out a living in this country. Mm-hmm. And I had been working construction for a number of years, and I was saving for a house in Denver. And, you know, it just got to the point where stuff was so crazy, man. I didn't want to have a mortgage. I mean, you can tell how old I am. I didn't want to have 30 more years of a mortgage hanging over my head, $2,500, $3,000 a month, having to find that till I'm a pissy old man. I took the down payment money I had, and my wife and I found this place online. I had never even been to this town when we found this building and fell in love with it, came out here. you know, based on my construction background, I was able to meet with the planning department, the zoning department. I even met with the mayor, and we got this place rezoned because it was just a commercial. It was St. George's Church, and I got it rezoned from a church to a residential slash gallery space. So I was super fortunate. I live right downtown in this town, and they don't normally allow residential on the first floor. So I had to go in for a variance and come out here for meetings and plead my case. But luckily I got it approved 6-1, only one person voted against me. And so, yeah, so now I live in this 5,000 square foot church, man. And it's like a friggin' dream come true. I agree with your previous sentiment that there were too many churches, and that's exactly what happened here. There were two churches in this town, the same faith, and they didn't have enough folks to fill both congregations. And so the other place, I guess, won out. This place sat vacant for about a year. Nobody knew what to do with it because they couldn't turn it into a church, and folks weren't seeing the creative side of doing something else with it. So it sat. And I did something crazy and bought it.
It's so cool. I mean, just to have stained glass in now your house, and to have, I mean, the cool part about older churches, because that's what that looks like all the wood and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So 1895, okay. This portion was built. And then in 2002, they put an addition on with a big old kitchen and a big old, like, almost a community room. It's a big, you know, 1,800 square foot room. That's our living space on the other side of this building. So we kind of live over there in the new space, and then the gallery space here is going to, or the church is going to become the gallery space as we get a little more settled.
Which is insane. And I think I'm probably more on the really progressive side of church goers or workers and stuff, but like the reality is churches fail for a reason, right? Like if they just aren't in the community doing what they should be doing, like they just go to the wayside. But to repurpose a building is insane. And it's like ornate, and there's beauty in it. And whatever we believe, like churches are constructed unreal ways. Like the wood is insane. I can't wait to even show clips of this video.
Yeah, I'll do a little pan around. We're done here. I'll get up with my iPad and do a quick walk around. But yeah, the woodwork in here is crazy. Yeah, there are 27 pieces of original stained glass.
Oh my gosh.
In this space. And you can see there's five behind me. And I've got, I think, maybe 16 or 18 all by the same artist. And they're a progression of Christ's life clockwise all around the church. So you start literally with the birth, and it works its way all the way around full circle. It tells the entire story in a dozen or so pictures. It's cool, man. It's just cool.
Unreal. So in this church, in the gallery space, I'm assuming there's still pews.
You know, I've got four left. When we moved into this place, it was packed. I mean, it was there were, I want to say 18, 12 foot pews in here.
Yeah.
So I unscrewed them from the ground. The place is all hardwood floors, and I repurposed about a half dozen of them throughout the building elsewhere. But I ended up offering them to folks here in town for a reasonable price. I wanted to free up the square footage. It was something part of the community that they wanted back. So I let them, you know, come in and buy them for, you know, next to nothing. This church a number of years ago was failing financially even before I bought it. And so the pastors and such sold like the rights, or not the rights, but a commemoration to the stained glass, to the pews. So all around this building, there's these little brass plaques with all kinds of stuff dedicated to folks who used to come here. And some of these dates are from the 1980s, some are from the 1940s.
Yeah.
This place has got some, it's just got some history, man. Yeah, it really does. And yeah, the pews were beautiful. They're huge. And yeah, we saved some, and then I gave some back to folks who live in town.
Insane. Let me tell you, this is just an offer. At any moment, if you're like, we're going to do a show or anything, Toys on Tap is at your service. We can promote, we can do whatever. That's such a cool spot.
Bro, I really appreciate that. You know, and I'm sure we'll talk more about what I do. I don't even know how to talk about what I do, because I don't quite know what I do. I just kind of fell into this, and I'm trying to figure it out like a lot of people do. Not a lot of resources out there. I'm not always great at marketing myself. But yeah, brother, if you could help out with that, I'll take it. I love making stuff. I love painting stuff. I have a real hard time with selling my stuff and selling myself, yeah. I guess. But yeah, I've got the space now and I've got shelving. I'm putting lighting in and all this stuff. And yeah, the goal is ultimately to have toy shows here, to have local artists in central Illinois who wouldn't have a forum for their art elsewhere. Just a chill place. I don't want to keep this building to myself, man. I want everybody who can walk through it to come check it out. The world needs to see this place.
Unreal.
It's a beautiful room, man.
Well, we're here to figure out who you are, and maybe we'll figure out what you do and give you words to that. Walk me back. Tell me you're a kid. It's Saturday morning. You're getting up. What are the cartoons you're watching? What are the toys you have? Tell me all that kind of stuff.
And I've watched and listened to a number of your videos in preparation for this. And I knew that was a question you're going to ask me. And I talked to my wife last night. I'm like, I'm not quite sure how to answer that. She goes, well, just be straight. I'm sure other folks will be in the same situation as you. Mm-hmm. So honestly, I didn't really have action figures and creatures and toys like that when I was a kid. And I love my parents, don't get me wrong, but they more pushed the educational side of fun. So my mom worked for a company called Discovery Toys. So yeah. I got toys and games that were supposed to promote learning. I got Legos, and Legos are still fucking cool. Don't get me wrong. Legos are amazing. But I got stuff to like build with, Lincoln Logs. There was this stuff, you're younger than me, there was stuff called Capsella. And it was from Europe.
I don't know that.
Okay. And it was these little clear parts it was kind of a stuff you built, but it also had little motors and stuff. So you could have fans and wheels, but it was all the stuff I had growing up was construction. You made something, you created something. You didn't play with it. And similarly, I didn't watch a ton of cartoons when I was growing up. I loved cartoons, go to my friend's house and watch them, but I didn't watch a lot like at my house. And I joke now, that's all I do. Now I'm a 50-year-old man and I play with toys and I watch cartoons all friggin' day.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think, one, whoever got you all the construction toys, your mom was setting you up for construction. She knew what she was doing.
Well, she was. I'm definitely that. I work with that side of my brain more than I have my whole life. Yeah.
And then to not have toys, but then to get into a world that revolves around nothing but toys is a crazy transition, because there's not really, the harder part is like, we all have our origin story, but you like came about it as you went on.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm really late to the game. You know, I didn't buy my first like plastic toy. I'm 49 years old now. I'll be 50 here. I didn't buy my first plastic toy until I was probably 27 or 28 years old.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah, but you made it back.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I spent my whole life as a kid trying to be responsible, professional, you know, make that coin, you know, wearing a tie, you know, all that. And I fought trying to be that guy for a long time. I thought that's the guy I wanted to be. And I realized I didn't want to be that guy after a number of years of trying.
That's... you know, we have an extra part of the Nitty Gritty episode that goes on the end for every artist. And that's what I want to talk about with you. So I'm excited about that.
Right on. Okay.
Because being in like a pretending state of who you think you are, like that's huge. So was art ever a thing then growing up? Because if you're headed towards like building and that kind of stuff, using a different side of your brain, like is art still a part of that?
Art is everything to me now. I mean, it started out when I was young. I liked, you know, again, my folks, for all their wonderful intentions, didn't introduce me to a lot of art. We didn't go to museums. We didn't listen to a lot of fun music. I had to discover all that on my own. And, you know, and growing up in Aurora, Colorado, it was kind of hard to find that culture. Mm-hmm. So I really had to branch out for it. So I guess my initial love started with like picking colors. I'm not even looking at it as art. It's like, I'm going to paint my apartment pink and green. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to paint it really ornate pink and green. And it developed with colors. And then it became art. And now nothing else matters to me, almost to the point of it's this maniacal obsession. Every inch of my house is filled with art. If I buy a new painting, I almost have to take something else down and put it in storage or give it away to make room for it. I'm constantly scouring the world for beautiful art. Always, always.
Which I think that's like so often we get caught, right? Like I love Ewok toys, but if that's all I collected, I'd have a problem of a shelf. And so to say that you just collect any art or that you're looking for, that's, I love that. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's mostly, you know, mostly portraits, you know, I really kind of gravitate to women's portraits. We have a ton of those around our house and, you know, being an independent toy guy, there's not always a lot of money for art, but I find so much love in like buying artists like pencil drawings or their concept stuff they put together prior to the $10,000 painting.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of, I mean, a whole space of just black and white pencil drawings and sketches that I think are just as beautiful and as inspirational sometimes as a final piece. I get to see a chunk of how it get there, of how it got there.
Yeah. Which is, I love that too. It's like collecting prototypes, right? Like if we want a toy prototype, you can get a drawing prototype.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
So, I mean, as you, at what point you go through college, you get into construction, all that kind of stuff, and then you hit 28 and all of a sudden you buy a toy?
Yeah. So I didn't even go to college. I was in high school.
Okay.
I was working at a drug research clinic, just an after-school job, like doing like blood slides and stuff. I took experimental asthma drugs for money when I was a kid, so I just got a little part-time job at that clinic. And we had a patient whose husband was an architect. Mm-hmm. She's like, hey, you want to come work first? I'll pay you $2 more an hour. Mm. You know, so going from $6 an hour to $8 an hour, that was some coin.
Yeah.
So I jumped on it, and I was just a aimless stoner kid, not knowing what I wanted to do, got in with this architect, and never looked back. Then I went back and forth from the architectural design side to the construction side, back and forth over 30 years.
Yeah. That's insane.
It was insane. And it's real high intensity, lots of hours, lots of pressure, lots of stuff going on. And I think the toy stuff was just my mind kind of forcing me to say, man, you've got to find something in your life that's pretty or that provides value or that gives you something. Mm-hmm. It's not just this constant drone of the phone going off and the meetings and the folks yelling at you and sitting in a construction trailer 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
That kills you, man. It does.
It's really insane that you worked at a lab, like right out of high school or in high school. Like that's crazy.
Looking back on it is, I'm surprised they even, and again, this is a long time ago, and obviously HIPAA and the medical world and responsibility, liability, all that is way different now than when I was a kid. But yeah, I mean, I was a 16, 17 year old kid, and I was doing I could do EKGs on people. I was putting on gloves and doing urine samples and blood samples in the lab. It was crazy. It was a crazy job, and I guarantee there's no way you'd let some goofy ass kid do that nowadays. I'd hope not.
Yeah. I know what I was like as a kid. Half of those blood samples would have been gone.
Yeah.
Just missing.
I hope everybody's okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, you hit 28, your brain is like, we need to get going. We need some expression of creativity, something.
Yep. So I got divorced. I had just built a big ass house up in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, and I sold it, got divorced, and I'm like, I'm going to come back to Denver, get grounded. So I came back, I met my now wife about 20 years ago, and I don't know, I wasn't specifically out shopping for toys, but I'll tell you, the first, like, I guess art toy or designer toy I bought was a 10-inch Frank Kozik Labbit, a big glow-in-the-dark Labbit with a cigarette in his mouth. I mean, a cigarette in the rabbit's mouth. I mean, that shit's funny 20 years ago. It didn't exist. I loved it.
Yeah.
And I think I found that at, Urban Outfitters or somewhere just got awful like that. And I grabbed it, put it on the shelf. Like, this thing's kind of cool. And then a few weeks later, we're walking down Broadway in Denver, and there's this shop called the Plastic Chapel. And it's this little toy store, 50 square feet with 30 or 40 toys in it, but they've got like some ugly bears and some series one dunnies and some little stuff like that. Went inside, met the owners, and kind of fell in that way with this world. I never really liked Dunny's or any of that, but I fell in love with like Tim Biscup's art. I saw that you talked to Luke Chu, who is,
yeah,
my God, he is just, his work, just the simplicity and the sadness in it. Mm-hmm. It's like nothing I've seen. I was fortunate to be able to buy a painting of his 17, 18 years ago, and it's about my favorite thing in my home.
Have you met Luke?
I have not met Luke. No, I've seen a ton of interviews with him,
yeah,
but I've never actually met him. He just seems like such a nice, chill.
Yeah, super funny. You'd never know like that all that sadness exists in his paintings.
Yeah.
And it's just that episode, it was just a lot of laughter. So it was a cool episode with him.
It was a cool episode. Yeah, that was the one I kind of latched on that you did. And I'm also a big fan of Suck Lord, who you spent some time with. I've got the original Homo Trooper still in packaging on my shelf. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
14. I think it ended up being 14 hours with Suck Lord.
Holy moly. I don't think I've got quite that amount of time, brother, but I'll do what I can.
Yeah. So you buy that. I mean, which kind of ignites a lot of stuff. I mean, what's different, what I think when people grow up with toys is we see the toys that we grew up with and we're like, that's, I got to buy that. But for you not growing up with it, seeing a Labbit and you're like, oh, that's insane. Like it ignites something different. And so you go into this plastic chapel. Is this all of a sudden you just start like, I want this and this and this.
Yes. We became friends with the owners. We were going out to dinner with them. Yeah. It took over a little bit. And then similarly, we had a wonderful gallery open in Denver. It was called Limited Addiction Gallery.
Okay.
David B. Smith Gallery is the current name. David Smith is the owner of it. It's still in Denver. Their work that has changed a little bit. But similarly, it was artists in that same vein that I love. So they'd have like Luke Chu or Jeff Soto or Tim Biscup, Josh Keyes. So that was really that window in my life 20 something years ago, the switch flipped, man. And I turned into a different guy.
Yeah.
The guy that I like better than the old guy.
Yeah. That's always a good thing. And then you're in Denver. So at some point in this time, now that you're getting involved with toys, I think you come in contact with Paul.
Oh, most definitely. Yes, yes.
So
Paul is salt of the earth, one of the most kind, decent human beings I've ever known. Truly.
And so at some point in there, in this collecting and in your time in Denver, we decide to make toys.
Mm-hmm.
What's that decision?
Yeah, so it was also sort of organic. I've been collecting forever. My whole house is overflowing with toys, boxes in the garage because I can't fit them anywhere.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1.82. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsoring Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSONTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
And I get to the point where I've got a couple little random toys that I kind of wish matched some other toys I had. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know what? I'm a mildly competent individual. I can build a 12-story building. I can probably paint a toy.
Yeah.
So I buy an airbrush. I destroy 6 or 8 toys. It's emotional. But each one I destroy a little bit less than the previous one. And it got to a point where I'm, you know what, this doesn't look great, but it doesn't look bad. I can see something developing here. And so I spent probably 2.5 to 3 years just painting other people's toys, doing commission work, finding stuff, you know, old Star Wars toys on eBay or cheap stuff here and there that I can paint and dump in my shop, and just painting to paint. Painting to learn. And at some point, folks kind of started to like what I was doing and painting then to sell more. And it was really, it was flattering. Mm-hmm. It was an emotion I hadn't had before. People coming to me because they liked me, not because they needed something from me.
Mm.
If that makes any sense. You know, you're in construction, you're a project manager. You just got people lined up out the door, just either wanting to chew you out or they need something because the job's going to fail if you don't do it right now. And then all of a sudden, people were sending me notes and they're happy. and they're nice. Hey, man, I love your work. You're inspirational. I had never experienced that before. So it literally went from painting and then more painting. And like, you know what? Now I kind of want to paint my own stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it evolved into that. Designing my own first toy that I didn't sculpt myself. I kind of was living on the periphery. I've got little samples here. This is my first toy.
Oh, he's so wonderful.
This guy here. So a fellow that's no longer on Instagram sculpted this for me. Mm-hmm. And I had him made in Hong Kong. And I learned a lot. I lost my ass on him financially. I'm still happy with him. But yeah, that was the only toy that I've made that was not with Paul over at Mile High. The next four that I've also got sitting here were all with him. And once I met him, he made it so much easier, man. So much easier.
Yeah, I'm working with him on a project right now, and it's stupid how easy it is. Like, it's just he does well. I mean, going into toy making, I mean, you described something that also probably changed you at a core when someone desires you just because they like what you do versus like you need to do something. That's a core rewiring of who we are.
It was almost like a day of reckoning. Like I had to sit back and say, man, I don't know how to feel about this. I've never had, you know, aside from my wife and my mom, who I think is contractually obligated to love me, people haven't always liked me to like me. I guess it's as simple as that. And it was always about, I need something from Ryan. I need all this shit. Mm. And when it became, hey man, I would love for you to paint something for me. I know you're busy. I don't care when you get it done. Anything you could do for me would make me so happy. Man, that just makes me want to cry. As a grown ass old man, it still brings tears to my eyes when somebody likes that. I mean, even you reaching out to me for this, brother. I mean, I've never been interviewed for something I love. This was so friggin' flattering of you to think of me and reach out and want to talk to me. I was nervous. I didn't know what to say. I'm like, I got nothing to say. I'm just some asshole. But it means a lot to me. It truly does. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So let's talk about your first toys. I mean, I want to hear the rundown. You start to go from collecting a lot to I want to start making is always interesting. I think it's probably easier to make that transition when you work with resin toys because it's like you can buy all that stuff at home. But when you work with Sifubi and you're like now working with another country, a sculptor, painters, there's a lot going on. So that first toy, tell me the ins and outs of it. And then tell me like how you lost so bad, like what happened there.
Like I said, I'll be totally straight with you on everything. Yeah. So yes, I did try some resin type stuff at first at home. And the castings were great, but they weren't consistent, not to the point where I would have been proud to put out say 20 of something.
Yeah.
And I kept trying it and I found it frustrating. And I knew the ultimate goal was to get into Sifubi anyway. And I was using that as kind of I felt like that was the natural bridge. Like you have to be a resin guy before you could be a soft vinyl guy. So I tried to be that guy and I just wasn't. And this was when I was still working construction. So I had a little bit of expendable income and I'm just like, okay, well, screw it. I'm just going to try it. I've got the money. I've got the time and I'm going to work through this process once and see if it's something I want to continue with. Mm-hmm. So I've always loved, again, I've loved vintage like squeak toys, like Edward Mobley toys and the real like innocent stuff from the 50s and 60s. And so that's kind of what this dude was kind of sculpted after. Like I wanted him to kind of look like he was from the 50s, but also, you know, shit kind of got a little crazy later in his life.
Yeah.
So that was the concept behind it. And so I drew this out, sculpted what I could. And then I had a sort of friend on Instagram. His name was Ben. He went by Ben Busy. You probably know who he was. He's done some toys. And I had him complete the sculpt for me. And I gave him some money. And I was happy with the sculpt. Then took that sculpt and we sent it to Intercept in Hong Kong. And they're the ones that manufactured this toy for me. And I don't know what their current process is. We're going back five and a half years now, but back then they had a 200 piece minimum.
Holy hell.
Yeah. And I, you know, again, not knowing what I didn't know, even considering myself fortunate to have a manufacturing company talk to me, I felt like I needed to jump on this opportunity and take it. So I ordered 200 of these guys. I think I still have six or eight left.
Okay.
And yeah, they all showed up during COVID. I had to pay FedEx, like FedEx Priority from Hong Kong for three huge boxes. It cost me about $500 just to get them here, let alone the ridiculous expense of buying 200 of them, plus the molds and such. So that's kind of how I lost my ass. I mean, I think ultimately, I think I probably came out or broke even on that toy. But man, it took me up until a year or so ago, probably, to get there.
Yeah.
Due to all the upfront expenses. And I wanted to go, you know, do right by everybody. So I gave Ben a lot of money. I tipped him on top of what I paid him. I had somebody help me out with header cards. I really went all out on that thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I did. Don't get me wrong. It was definitely fun to really do it. But now I'm reeling it back in, brother, trying to keep things a little simpler, a little closer to my heart. I'm doing all the sculpting myself, all the painting myself. I'm doing my own headers going forward. And then it's just the me and Paul show.
Really. Yeah. And it's
so much easier, right?
Yeah. And that toy looks great. I mean, it does capture what you're looking to capture, that first toy. 200's a lot of anything. That, good God, that's, yeah. And especially if you're just starting, 200 doesn't seem like a lot if you are a Luke Chu who just offloads everything because he's good and people want right. stuff. But when you're just starting, I mean, the piece is really good and I would have bought it when it came out, but like 200 is daunting. So did it come painted? Did they do all the painting in Hong Kong?
No, I painted this guy.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, though, this is my paint. This is literally my number. I don't know if you can read the foot. This is my number one sucker that I painted this guy. So he's kind of special to me. But painting's my love, bro. I mean, I like the sculpting.
Yeah.
But the painting is really where I love, once I get my sculpt going, that I can paint this 400 times. Everyone can be different and they can all be as crazy as I want.
You and I could not be more different with painting because I want to kill myself every time we talk about painting.
Tell you about that real quick, bro. I know I want to hear a little bit about what your deal is too. So tell me why that is. Tell me why that is.
I don't know what it is, but it's like creating something. I'm all for it. Let's create something really good. And if it's like five or less, we'll paint it up and we're good to go. But, you know, DKE Dove. Mm-hmm. So I'll do stuff with him for Designer Con and I'll get something at his booth. And it used to be where it was like paint 20 of them. Mm-hmm. I cannot. It's the same thing. It feels it's something in my brain is like, I don't want to do the same thing over and over again.
Okay.
So it's a little tough, but I get through it every year. And every time I'm like irritated the whole time. But to hear people that love painting, you guys are a different breed and it's great.
Yeah, man, I totally love to. I've done, if you've seen the stuff I've posted, Gerald Okamura, the actor, he has that little Takumo toy, like a little tiki sumo. I've now painted well over 100 of those for him.
Gosh.
I do like 20 piece runs and I've done 5 to 7 of those. Mm-hmm. For him. And I'd prefer to do just one-off paints all the time, but I do still kind of get down on that assembly line style of laying out all 20 heads and, you know, painting 40 eyeballs all in an afternoon. I dig that, man. I dig it.
That's crazy. That is so crazy. I think too, my love, growing up with toys, you come across some toys that are painted nuts and how a factory did it, I'll never know. I just like finished a design and like they got produced and stuff, but it was so much painting and stuff and like all the different paint masks. That's why I don't want to do it.
Was it the Furby?
Yeah. And it's
dude,
like,
that has crazy paint. I don't know.
Yeah.
So tell me about that real quick. Cause I think it's a really cool sculpt. I'd punch a man to be able to paint a couple of those. If you want to send some my way.
So sadly, they all come painted. They all are done. My hope is to eventually make this soft vinyl piece.
Yeah,
it has that vibe. But yeah, you know, working with Bottleneck in this, it like, yeah, they said the paint masks alone were like the main problem, the main like cost. which I get. Like, that's when we designed it, that was, we knew this was coming.
Yeah.
But it was like, it was a pain in my ass. It was so much.
Is this the most complicated piece you've been a part of?
Yeah, it's the one that has taken the most time. And so I did a run of like 5.5 inch for Dove. At that scale, you're still having to paint it all. And that's all by hand. I don't have any paint masks. So that was so frustrating. But we did it. Knocked it out.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I mean, because that guy has, he has so much detail. You want it to be crisp.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how my toy here was. Some of the stuff I've been doing lately is a little more organic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as long as it's got some nice wrinkles and lumps and bumps, you get those sprays and it takes paint nice and you get some good fades on them. You can get a lot more drama with a lot less tape.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So, I mean, you produce the first one.
Yep.
And then is it in between that one and your next one you meet Paul?
Correct. Yep. Okay. Yep. That's exactly what happened. So I made that one. I was painting this guy, his name's Sucker. He's just called Sucker.
Yeah.
So I was painting those just here and there, throwing them in my shop, painting other stuff, still working, you know, my full-time construction job and just kind of unwinding on the weekends and painting. And it got to the point where I'm like, I'm about to snap and I'm going to have to quit my job because I'm having a mental breakdown. Mm-hmm. I better figure out something else to do here. I'm going to get my sculpting game ramped up. So the next thing I did that I still think is probably one of the best things I've done for myself is I taught myself Nomad sculpt on my
own. Yeah.
So I grew up drafting, you know, I learned AutoCAD shit back on version 10 when it was still DOS based.
Mm-hmm.
So drafting and all the commands and the way stuff lays out for a CAD file and for a building, it's remarkably similar to how the layers and all that stuff lays out in 3D modeling and sculpting, except for this is a lot more fun and it's all free form, but I'm still building this thing in this virtual world. And so teaching myself Nomad was huge. You know, my hands don't always do what I want them to do. So sculpting, like hand sculpting is just, it's hard for me. I just don't quite have it. Maybe if I would have started younger or if I was more patient, But this, if I screw up, I can just hit the undo button a few times, bring it back and keep sculpting and get to the point where I really like it.
Yeah.
Whereas I sit down with a lump of clay, man, and I get sad and frustrated.
Yeah. Which that's incredible to teach yourself Nomad. A lot of the sculptors I encounter, they all use Nomad. And so you start sculpting your toy. Do you have... with your first toy being made and like going through the process of like, it's taking you a long time to break even on this toy. Is that just sitting in the back of your head as you're starting to sculpt your next toy? How is that changing how you do art?
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait! Salvation! Hooray! We're saved, DLV2! Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys!
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures!
DKE!
You know, that's a great question. That's a very good question. And it changed a lot because, I knew that I couldn't keep doing construction. It was costing my health. And I, you know, my wife's wonderful. I wouldn't say it was costing us our relationship, but it was causing some tension at home. I wasn't sleeping well. I was cranky. I was short with people around me that I loved. And so obviously having the weight hanging over my head, like if I want to do this, I cannot lose money. I have to at least break even to cover my half of the bills, or I'm going to have to find something else to do. And so part of the epiphany was, you know what? It's not like I can either do construction or art, and those are my only two options. I can create art and still leave construction. I can go work at a grocery store. I can work at a gas station. I can do something to supplement while I'm developing this skill. I knew I had to leave construction, and I knew I had to start really ramping up the creative side of my mind. And so, like I said, I've got a very supportive wife. She was working, helping covering the bills while I was learning, getting up and going. And yeah, so I then took my next sculpt all the way from, yeah, me learning Nomad all the way to getting the full file, meeting, I call him Sifubi Paul, meeting Paul.
Yeah.
And him walking me through the whole process. I wasn't afraid of the process anymore with him. You know how it is talking to him. I mean, your expense is paying for the mold, really. You know, you buy the mold, and then once the mold is bought, Paul doesn't make you buy 200 pieces.
Mm-mm.
Paul keeps your life pretty chill.
Yeah. And it's helpful for the thing that I'm like, we're working together on, because I can't buy 200. There's no way I can sell. Like that's a large number. So, I mean, you do that, you meet Paul. I mean, Paul has spoken very highly of you, absolutely loves you as well. And so seeing that kind of dynamic form, and you're into this toy making, at what point does it click over for you where you're like, this is just what I'm doing. I'm just going into toy making. The rest of the world's behind me.
It was right at the same time that this was the first toy that I sculpted myself was this guy. So here I'll
pull it up. Oh yeah, he's great.
So I don't know if the world thinks he's great. I'm still super fond of him. Whoop, I don't know what the camera's doing. There we go. So I named him Abzerk, like a cross between obese and berserk.
Yeah.
You know, he's just a fat naked dude, but I really wanted to get some texture into him and some stuff where I can get some nice face. You know, he's got one. I love eyeballs. In case you haven't noticed, eyeballs were like one of my favorite things. So I try to get some nice big expressive eyes on what I do. But yeah, so that was my first guy I sculpted myself. Did the header card myself, and it was just me and Paul on that one. And like I said, I haven't sold that money, but I also haven't lost my ass on it either. As long as I cover the old costs and cover some blanks to keep a few of them rocking and rolling here and there, it's not this huge money dump every time somebody doesn't love your work as much as you love your work.
Right.
Right. I mean, this is the coolest fucking toy that's ever been made. And then I sell four of them. I'm like, well, why doesn't everybody else think it's as amazing as I do?
Yeah. What I love about toys is when you think it's the coolest thing you've ever made, and even if you sold one, that feeling doesn't change. Like, I still have that. That's what warms me for the next toy. So I'm really pumped about that always.
Awesome. Awesome. Tell me what your next piece is then. What are you working on?
I mean, I have two shows, or there's three shows coming up that I'm in. One is Mint on Card in Australia. Okay. And so I'm going to do, I have another Furbzerker piece I'm going to do, but it's going to be themed off of my pet monster. So my pet Furbzerker, and I'm going to put it in a cage on a backer. And
oh, how fun. Okay.
And then what's the next one? There's a kaiju show at Earth to Kentucky. And I'm bouncing between making some kind of like Furbzilla, because Furbies are in my life, versus changing it and making, like, you know what perla beads are? Those like little.
Oh, I sure do. Yeah.
So making some kind of 3D of Godzilla destroying something out of perla beads is a thought. And then the last one is a thing for Dove. I'm making, I don't know where I got this idea. It's like R2 looks like a shop vac.
Okay.
So I want to make something called Space Vac and like little vacuums that you get, but it's R2 or R5 themed.
Dude, I love that. I love that.
But yeah, so I mean, I don't produce the podcast kind of takes up my time. I don't produce as much as I would love. It also could be laziness. Who knows? Who knows what's in here? But I do know that like I can get my ass in gear when I need to start producing and doing all that stuff. So okay. I'm excited for it all.
Well, you and I sound like we have a similar philosophy, because it's more than just the toy.
Yeah.
It's the package. It's the splendor. All of it is so, it can be whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
You know, my folks don't understand that. I show them these things and they want to know what movie it's from or what story I pulled this from. And I'm like, it's not from anything. It's just some weird stuff that was floating around up here that I had to get out. And now it's here.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to have a huge backstory or a library's worth of knowledge behind it. It could just be something funky, fresh
Yeah.
For folks to get their hands on.
And my parents, like
yeah. Yeah, because same thing, all the colors and yeah, doing backdrops and all that stuff. It's fun, man. It's fun.
It's super helpful. And I love it a lot. Package design is one of my favorite things. Even coming up with like what I've gotten into now is if I find a brand that has like a good kind of flip thing or some kind of packaging that's like incredible, how can I recreate that? And so there's been days I'm spending 6-7 hours like measuring each piece and getting on Illustrator and like recreating it so I can use it or figure out how to replicate. And it's great. Like my favorite, and then working with Alibaba to find a manufacturer that can send me all this stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Which has been fun. I just made one that I am hoping to get out to more people. It's just a weird flip. It's not even that great, but it's like, for me, it was like, oh, I made that. I had to replicate something crazy.
No, dude, I would love to say it. Packaging is huge. And that's, I've been definitely slacking on that. I mean, you know, luckily with Sofubi, the cool thing is just give me a plastic bag and a cardboard header and you're solid. But man, custom boxes and all that stuff, you can really go to town.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah, of course.
Well, I don't know if this can stay in because it's a project I got to work on, but why is Sofubi always in a bag?
That's a wonderful question. That's a wonderful question. I've been told, and again, I don't have the history, a lot of folks do, that it comes down to literally this stuff being traditionally Japanese, and Japanese folks, A, don't always have a lot of shelf space. You know, space is always of a premium, be it in a shop or in your home. Mm-hmm. So the shops don't want it because they can fit more toys in without all that big bulky packaging. And it didn't bring a lot of value to the folks buying it because they were mostly concerned with the goodies inside the bag.
Mm.
And so I think it was mostly just initially an economic decision that just became tradition.
Yeah.
And I'm not at all an expert, but that's at least the way it's been kind of put to me, because I was curious too. It's like all the stuff I've been buying by American and European artists, sometimes I feel like this thing's in a $20 box for $100. Yeah. How do you justify all this velvet and all this stuff to make these boxes? They're so friggin' nice. Yeah, and then I buy a crazy expensive soft vinyl toy, and it's in a shitty little plastic bag.
Right, and so the thing that I'm working with Paul on, this is the part I'll cut out. The thing I'm working with Paul on is, so reality, I got burned a little bit on the Furbzerker. The company that produced it didn't promote like they should have, so it didn't sell as much as it could have.
Okay,
which is fine. Like you just live and learn. And so I wanted to do that style of stuff for artists and get their work produced. So there's a guy named Pocket Salsa, and he was sculpting these like little creatures. And I said, listen, I want to produce that. I'll pay for the molds. I'll work with Paul. I'll get all that done. Once we produce, I need to make back the money for the mold and the first run. And then you get your IP back. I don't care. Like, and then we'll like, so the first run, I do have to order like 200. I do have to order for that one. But I said, once we make back the cost of the mold, whatever's left, we'll split 50-50. And then it's your IP. Once we're done, have fun. You can print as much as you want. And it's this little shark guy that's only two piece Sofubi.
Okay.
And one, just the seam around the stomach.
Yep.
And I want to produce, and his name is Chum. And I thought, why not produce it in a box that's like, there's nothing in the box, but the box is a shark cage.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. And it's, they're like 4 inches. So the box wouldn't be crazy. It's not wouldn't that, like, is that weird?
Dude, that is so not weird at all. I will always take a box over a bag. It's always a pleasant surprise.
Okay.
Always a pleasant surprise. If I had more funds or knew that my stuff was really going to sell, I would always do boxes. My newest chair, I'm just going to get up for 1 second.
Yeah.
So my newest guy is he's a big, tall wizard. He's just one piece. It's what I'm going to send you for a giveaway.
Heck yeah.
But I didn't know how to package him, so I'm not quite doing a box, but I just bought some big cardboard shipping tubes.
That's perfect.
That I'm just going to paint up and graffiti up with paint and stickers and shit. Mm-hmm. Then everybody at least gets a custom package. I can just slap, you know, there's your name right on there.
Heck yeah.
So I'm doing that. for this particular toy. But dude, I'm going to probably reach out to you after this and pick your brain on some packaging, because if there's a way to get boxes for toys for just a couple bucks a piece, I would love to start going down that path.
Honestly, Alibaba, I mean, people talk a lot of crap on Alibaba. I get it. Like, who knows? But at this point, it's gotten so good that they're verified. Your money's protected. You can find a company. Translation tools are near perfect. And they send you pictures of everything. Honestly, it's like the easiest way to go. And there's factories that are like, so the flip books that I had created, it's just like paper, but no one could do it in the US because of the cuts I needed. Okay. And FedEx Ship and Print quoted me like $1,500 It was so specific. And I said, that's stupid, like unreal. And so I reached out to a company over there. They produced 500 of them. And they said, $150, we'll ship them.
What?
So it was like, and they worked with me on everything along the way. They said, make sure all the spell, like, it was great.
Oh man. Yeah. I'm doing that next time. We're going to be talking quite a bit about that.
Awesome.
I'd love to start doing some nicer packaging.
And I mean, packaging is so fun because for some people it means the world, but some people it means nothing. And I like figuring out who likes it and who doesn't. It's really funny.
I like the whole experience, Yeah. I had a decent, a pretty successful shop drop actually on Saturday from my shop. Mm-hmm. And so I then spent Sunday about 5.5 hours packing. You know how it goes. The least enjoyable part of making and selling toys is having to literally pack them all up.
Yeah.
But when folks open that box, I want it to be a pleasant experience.
Yeah.
Especially if there's no packaging, you know, because I'm still wrapping it in bubble wrap, but I still want to put in goodies and stickers. And, you know, I did some little paintings at my first 30 of these Cold Dunes and sell. Everybody gets like a little mini custom painting. So I'm trying to do something a little special.
Heck yeah.
Beyond just the toy. I totally agree. Packaging is always fun. Whatever.
Absolutely. Level. So totally. You're working now with Paul and you're painting and doing all this stuff, which is incredible. Like, we're now, construction's behind us. We're now doing what we love.
Hold on. Aside from having to rebuild part of the church, everything's done. Yeah.
There, which is awesome. And but what I've learned. Yeah. And are you like manning and doing the rebuilding of the parts that you need? Or are you like.
It is. I would even say it's rebuilding this place.
Okay.
You said it perfectly earlier. There's money in churches.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever had this place before me, they kept this place nice. If something failed, they fixed it and they fixed it right.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot here for us to do. I mean, it doesn't have a shower, doesn't have a washer and dryer. I don't have a stove. So I've got stuff that I need to put in to make it a home, but it's very livable and it's very clean and it's watertight. So all the important stuff's met. It's just that last getting it right across the finish line to make it into a home.
Right. Tell me about this toy. You had come up with the idea that you want to do a giveaway the week of your show. Which, awesome. Like, that when that happens, fan freaking task. I'm always game to do that. And I actually want to buy one of the other ones so that we can give away two of them.
Oh, dude, that's super nice.
Like, that's the, however we get toys into people's hands. And so
I feel the same way. I always want to get toys into people's hands. Sometimes at the expense of my own income, I'm like, you really love this toy and we're here talking, I'm about to close up shop. Why don't you just take that with you?
Yeah.
So it's hard. It's hard sometimes, but yeah, I'm in the same boat. Let's get toys into people's hands.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be able to find them otherwise. Cause it changed my life. I would love to at least be a little bit of that for somebody else.
Right. And so, with that, tell me about this toy. Show me this toy. Tell me about what we're giving away for this.
Yeah. Okay. So my newest toy, and I collaborated with my buddy he's in Russia. His name's, you probably know him on Instagram, Acid Ma.
Mm-hmm.
He's done some art for me in the past. And, so my newest toy, the goal was to make, you know, we're talking about budgetary stuff. I wanted to make a full size toy that was extremely affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that comes down to, as you know, articulation. The more pieces you have, the more the mold costs to make, mm-hmm. the more time and energy it costs Paul to produce it. And then the more he has to charge me to make it. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make a big One Piece toy. So I reached out to Paul. I'm like, how big can I go with a One Piece toy? He goes, man, you can do what you want. Go up to 10 or 11 inches if you want. So I kind of had an idea in my head of this sculpture. I wanted to do this wizard guy, real simple. And so it was literally just, I had the size of him established before I started sculpting him. I knew he was going to be big. And so I started, here's what he looks like.
He's fantastic.
Thank you. So it's a relatively simple sculpt, as you can see. I started with a cone from top to bottom, you know, and then I cut out and reversed his neck to give that line. And then I just went in and hand sculpted his face and his hands and this little owl and got those little details dumped in onto this really smooth, pointy, you know, real simple piece.
Yeah.
And so he's all one piece. Mm-hmm. I had originally planned to have the bottom wide open, just wide open. And luckily, Ivan, the fellow that makes Paul's molds, and Paul both said, hey, man, your toy's going to be a little nicer if we put a plug in the bottom.
Okay.
And Ivan didn't charge me that for the mold making process, which was cool. So then I got this nice little plug.
Oh, and that's great.
Can't quite see it, but there is an Ophelia Toys stamp in there.
Yeah.
And so now it's essentially a two-piece toy, but it still kind of lives as one piece. There's no articulation. But the nice thing about this, too, is now with this base, I can put an LED light in there and punch a hole out of his backside, and he makes a pretty sexy nightlight.
Yeah.
he's a super cool nightlight. I've got him. I should have turned the lights off and plugged one in here to show you. But, yeah, he's a pretty cool, you know, because the vinyl's nice and thin.
Yeah.
So the light just radiates from the inside of some of these, and they look really cool. So this guy is also, I'm selling electric ones here coming up as well, which will be fun.
Awesome.
This particular guy is a one-off. This was a black and orange marbled pour that Paul did. So all the black and orange you see, aside from this little bit of the tip, which I just painted as a highlight, all that black and orange is in the vinyl.
Beautiful.
And then I just mask and paint the hands.
How did you get, what was the cost you settled on for these?
I'm selling the one-off, like a custom one-off painted one for $100.
That's not bad at all.
I did a run of 8. It was the same paint job on 8 of them, and those were $75. The one of one blanks that I had Paul do were also $75. And then the night lights are also gonna be $75. I'm able to save a little bit money on the cheaper one pour vinyls. And then I can, you know, the little IKEA LED lights are like $5 a piece. They've got a million hours of battery life. They're wonderful.
Yeah.
So this guy kind of tops out at $100 for a 10 or 11 inch toy. I think that's very reasonable.
That's insane.
I really do.
Wow. 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 Wow.
Yeah. I've got smaller toys that I have to charge a bit more for because they were more pieces or a little more complicated. You know, this guy, he goes for a bit more because,
fantastic.
You know, limit the arms and waist and neck and such. And plus, you know, doll eyes. I'm a friggin' sucker for putting doll eyes into my toys.
Yeah. Wow. 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 That's crazy cool that you're doing that. And thank you so much for wanting to do the giveaway throughout the week.
Oh my God, of course. No, like I said, let's get toys into people's hands, especially, you know, you and I haven't really ever talked before. So it might be somebody that I don't know, somebody you don't know, somebody who found me through you or vice versa. Yeah, man. Let's give stuff away.
With all the toys that you are making and working with Paul and moving and getting to the church, all that stuff. What's next for Ophelia Toys?
Great question. So next I'm opening this place as a gallery. We've already got our license. There's a piece of stained glass in here. This was St. George's Church. In the Bible, St. George slays the dragon. And so I've got this huge 10-foot piece that I'm looking at it right now. This huge piece of stained glass with George stabbing this dragon. And so we've named this place the Red Dragon Gallery.
Awesome.
There's a fellow on Instagram. He goes by Fat Pigeon. He's going to be working out some marketing stuff for me. To give me a logo for the gallery space.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I've been going through the process of getting insurance so that I can have strangers in my home. Luckily this place was a church. So all the walkways and the bathrooms are all ADA handicap accessible. The whole building is compliant with with the required building code to have people in here.
Yeah.
And now we're buying tables and we're setting up shelving. You know, my wife makes soaps and lino cut prints and tie-dye t-shirts. And so we're going to load this whole church up with stuff. And I'm going to sell soft vinyl out of here. I'm going to sell stuff online. I'm going to have local artists here in my town or in Illinois or shit anywhere who wants to send stuff to me. I'll sell it here. And, you know, we're in a little small town. I can't imagine there's much draw locally for my stuff. But it's nice to have a space like this in a small town because it doesn't exist here.
Right.
So I'm hoping that the folks that are here, they don't know they need this space yet.
Yeah.
Is what I tell myself. They're going to realize they needed it once I show it to them. but I still need a few months to get there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can't wait. And then do you go to Designer Con and do those things? I've seen your work there with Paul.
Yeah, I've sent stuff. You know what? Maybe I could pick your brain on that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I have not made the jump to conventions yet.
Okay.
I get ready. I get some stuff painted. And then I get so discouraged when I look at what it's truly going to cost me to get a booth, a hotel, airfare, food. I can't go to a convention without spending money on other people's shit.
Yeah.
And I get discouraged on that. Not because I'm not confident in the work I do, but I just don't sell quite enough to make that pencil yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you go, right? You're Designer Con, right?
I am. I don't table with a podcast. Okay. It's really hard. I don't know how I would make anything. I think this year is the first year I'm considering like partnering with someone to figure out like how to do that. I think thought about it this way, that if you enjoy it and you do sell your work and you meet a lot of people and you're able to advertise your work and more people know who you are, you've nailed it. If you leave happy, right on. If you leave like, man, this sucked, like I didn't get what I, don't do it again. Like that's that easy. Yeah. I think I've heard a lot of people that have tabled and said like, man, I didn't come close to breaking even, but I'll be there next year. Okay. And I think that's because you can't pay, I don't know, like let's say 5,000 people walk past your booth. Paying so that 5,000 people see your work is probably just as expensive. And so we're really just paying the same amount, either it's at DesignerCon or somewhere else.
You know what? Then that's a good philosophy, bro. That's a really healthy way to look at it. I guess I haven't looked at it quite like that before, but that makes perfect sense. You know, when you've got a 9-to-5 job, you get a steady paycheck every other Friday that checks in your account and you can bank on it. When you're doing this, you've got some real fat months and you've got some real lean months. And as long as end of the year, when you pay your taxes, it all balances out and makes it worthwhile, you can continue doing it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So and you're right. You do lose your ass at a convention, but you pick up that slack somewhere else.
Yeah. And I mean, it's always a toss up, right? Like there's always a reason that it could go wrong. Like this is the first year that Designer Con's in Vegas. Who knows what's going to happen? None of us do.
Yeah. Are you going?
Yeah. And okay. So, it could be amazing. It could be the most like brilliant move in the world. It could be the most garbage event in the world, but I will be there because I think especially with the podcast, like I've met enough people to make this worth it no matter what. And hanging out with people, there's a guy, do you know Last Bastion?
Name sounds familiar. I can't quite
They're split up between Wes and Chris and they sell Ragnar and Jaguar figures.
Oh, totally know the Ragnar. Yeah.
I always like think about this, that like when I get to Designer Con, whatever year it is, I beeline it for their booth because I know that like when I see them, it's like friends that I haven't seen in a long time and just get to like walk up and hug them because like I love this place. And that makes it worth it within the first 5 minutes.
That's awesome. I love that.
So I don't know. It depends on your scale. If your scale is, I need to sell stuff, it's going to be tough. But if your scale is, this is my life and I love what I do, easier.
Totally. Yeah. The next, Speaking of not knowing how DesignerCon's going to go, there's a new show this year called CollectedCon.
Yeah.
Happening in Chicago here in about 6 weeks that I'm trying to get up to. That would be, I guess, my first show. I'm in Macomb, Illinois, so I'm about halfway between St. Louis and Chicago right now. Mm-hmm. So at least logistically, I can just take the Amtrak up there. All I got to do is find a hotel and, you know, some White Castle for the night. I'll be in good shape.
There you go. Yeah, I think Vegas, especially, I'm bummed because Anaheim was so close to me.
Totally, totally.
But out of San Diego, flights for Vegas get as cheap as 50, 60 bucks sometimes. So it's I'll pay 60 bucks to get to Vegas to go to a show. But yeah, so that's kind of where we're at.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. I'd love to chat with you here towards the end of the year and see how it actually went. And I'll talk to Paul too. I know Paul's going.
Yeah.
Paul's going to be at Collected Con, and Paul was at Five Points last week. And
yeah.
I don't know. I don't think he was at Monster Palooza the week before that, but yeah, I kind of live vicariously for him sometimes too. And he's pretty good about saying, you know what, Ryan, this one might not be worth it, or this one might be. So
yeah,
he's got his ear to the grindstone, and like we've said, he's never bashful about sharing industry knowledge with us. Whatever he's got, he'll give to you.
Awesome. So I mean, we have two more parts of the podcast that I love doing. The last part of this one, as we close this out, is you plug everything about yourself, where people can get a hold of you, how they can do all those things, get paint jobs and stuff. And then we'll move into the nitty gritty, which is a smaller portion that goes on the Patreon. So before we do that, please plug away everything.
Oh my God, that's so nice of you. So I, even though Instagram is a cesspool of depravity, it's kind of where I do all my marketing. So find me at Ophelia.toys on Instagram. You can also check out Red Dragon Gallery on Instagram. There are only two or three posts at this point, but that's going to start coming alive over the next few months as I start getting some other folks and some more product in here. I have a shop, Ophelia Toys Big Cartel. That's where I keep all the stuff I currently have available. My drops are always on Saturday mornings, but they're not consistent. But I always do an update a week or two prior. And the days leading up to it on Instagram. And that's kind of where I live, you know, on the internet. I don't have a big presence on there. I just signed up for Facebook just when I bought this church to help move those pews out of here. Cause mm-hmm. you know, in the Midwest, Facebook Marketplace is the go-to for all the folks. I had never been on it before, but man, I loaded those things up and they were out of here the next day. So I'm just now signed into Facebook, but I don't plan on using that for my toys, but maybe for the gallery or for local stuff, mm-hmm. since I think the local folks here do it. But yeah, I'm in Macomb, Illinois, halfway between St. Louis and Chicago. I'm in a wonderful space. There's cheap hotels. Anybody wants to come and visit me, wants to come and paint some toys, come on by. I mean, my home is anybody's home, and I truly mean that. I want this space to be a place where folks can come in and create. Not, this isn't just me creating, this is creativity embodiment here. So anybody that wants to come see me, give me 24 hours and we'll have a little party.
Heck yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It means the world. Man,
it means the world to me that you thought of me and thought to reach out. It's a little funky talking about myself, but man, you're just so chill and easygoing. You're asking really great questions. So I've had a wonderful morning hanging out with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.